Well, if it's 10 o'clock, it ain't an hour. He can't count. He can't count. He can't. It's pretty worse than that.
We're supposed to be in the chapel at 10:30.
I know.
And break would be about 10.
All right. So I thought I would just finish up today with just some general exhortation, really, to walk in the Lord. And if you'd like to turn in your Bibles to 1 Samuel 17, 37. 1 Samuel, that's in the Old Testament.
Thank you.
It's right next to Hezekiah.
1 Samuel
37. Yeah, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. Just an Old Testament expression here that you learn to trust God by trusting God. You know, the Hebrew way of learning was learning by doing. And if you didn't do what you had learned, then you hadn't learned. Okay? So in other words, the whole emphasis in the Hebrew understanding of learning is, are you able to do what you have learned to do? And here we have David saying, your servant killed a lion and a bear, verse 36, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like that. And he's talking about Goliath. David learned to kill Goliath because he had first learned to kill a bear and kill a lion. You know, God leads you to do exploits for him in degrees, line upon line, precept upon precept. You learn to pray for the sick. You don't go and try to raise the dead, first of all. You lay hands on your kids because they're sick. You pray for your wife because she's ill. She prays for you because you're ill. You know, you learn by doing, but you learn by degrees. And so here in verse 37 he says, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. David had trust in God because he had learned to trust God. The only way you can really trust God is to learn to trust God. And the only way that you can really learn to trust God is by going through problems. You know, we don't live on a perfect earth, and we don't live with perfect people, and we're certainly not perfect. Although one day one of my friends did meet, actually, a perfect person. He was a Presbyterian, which really explains a lot to me. This guy was, this friend of mine was preaching in a church, and he was talking about, you know, the fact that we'll never really be perfect. And this guy put his hand up and he said, well, I'm perfect. And he said, oh, you are, really? And he said, well, not actually me, but he said, my wife thinks that I am. He said, well, how long have you been married? And he said, 2 months. And he said, well, stick around. It'll change. You know, we realize that we're not perfect. Perfection will come. Somebody said the other day, perfection will come in heaven. And in the meantime, we are maturing. The Bible word really for perfection in the sense of this life is maturing. It's learning to mature. And then perfection is in heaven fully in the presence of God. But one of the things that we realize is that we won't ever really trust God until we really have to. You know, there's no other way to go. You know, if you don't trust God, you're sunk. look at the Israelites with the Red Sea. They took for granted that they could, you know, get out of the slavery of Goshen. Moses leading them out with signs and wonders, significantly. And, you know, Pharaoh saying, okay, I'll let you go out 3 days. But he didn't want to let them go. Pharaoh did not want to let them go. So the Israelites had to go, but they knew in their heart of hearts that they would not be let go. And that's what happens with slavery. Is you never let go. You never will let the slave go. Until something drastic happens. In the American experience, it was that catastrophic civil war, which killed 630,000 men. It was catastrophic. It killed over 5% of all of the American population at that time. A massive loss of life. To get rid of it. And yet, if they had done what William Wilberforce had done in 1837 and had it abolished through Parliament, or the equivalent, American equivalent, then it would never have led to a bloodbath. So God says, you know, I set before you life and death. Choose. You choose. What do you want? Life and death. And so the British Empire chose to abolish it, and the Americans chose to fight for it. And two different experiences. Look at what happened with the Red Sea then. Pharaoh says, okay, I'll let you go, but you can only go out 3 days hence to make sacrifice to your God, and then you've got to come back. Moses knew that if he could get them out of Goshen, he could make a run for it. Well, not a run, because they were walking across the desert. But 3 days away was enough to get away. And then they came after him with chariots. And so what did Israel do? They turned on Moses and said, you've led us out here to be killed. Look, Pharaoh's coming with his chariots. We're all going to be murdered now. Why did you let us out of slavery just to kill us? And Moses didn't know, you see, what God was going to do. God told him, go and stand at the shore and lift up your rod and see the works of God. And so God parted the Red Sea with a mighty wind, it says. And they walked over. But they didn't know until their backs were right up against the wall, or in this case, their backs were right up against the sea, that they were going to get away. They had no knowledge of it until it actually happened. And the funny thing was that Moses didn't either. Moses didn't have a plan, you know, that God said, okay, now when you get to the Red Sea, this is what's going to happen. He didn't know. He was just trusting God. You know, I've always believed, you know, that the joint, you know, Catholic Jewish prayer, Oive Maria. Oive. I've always believed that expression Oive came about when Moses hit the Red Sea. Like Oive. Veyus mihi. You know, what's going to happen now? Have you ever been there? Have you ever been there? You know, where you're at your wits and you absolutely do not know what to do. But you know that God has been with you. God was with you. Like David. David said, God was with me when I killed the bear. God was with me when I killed the lion. Therefore, he can kill this Philistine. But unless you can point back to God's faithfulness, we sang just a few minutes ago, "Great is thy faithfulness." It's only when you can point back to God's faithfulness and say, "God, you've been faithful to me before. You were with me back there. You were with me when my child went through that serious illness. You were with me when I had that car accident. You were with me when," you see, "when the engine caught fire on the plane to Ireland. You were with me," you see. "You were with me when I was arrested in the Congo for preaching in a Muslim market." By the way, it's not really the best thing to do. But I did not know, you know. I did not know it was Muslim. You know, I mean, you're in the middle of Africa, you don't think of Muslims, but boy, there's plenty of Muslims in Africa. But, you know, we got arrested and thrown into jail for preaching and without permission. And there, you know, they you're assumed guilty until you're proved innocent. So they were whipping people next door with car aerials. And you could hear them shrieking. And we thought, boy, we're next on the list. And so we were like Paul and Silas in jail, but, you know, we weren't really rejoicing.
No.
At midnight, we were like, "Oh God, spare us from the car aerials and the electric wires." You know, torture is quite common. And God delivered us. You know, we got out of the jail. Not only did we get out of the jail, but we prayed for the commandant of the jail to receive Christ before we got out, which is probably why we were supposed to get arrested in the first place. But we didn't know that at the time. But nevertheless, you know, you can point back to those experiences, you see. Whatever your experience is, "You were with me then, Lord. You were with me when, impossibly, I was able to find that house for my family, you know, with very little down payment. You were with me, Lord, when you got me transport, when I didn't have a car and you helped me." You know, so you point back to those experiences. And then you say, "Okay, Lord, now I'm up against this one. But Lord, you were faithful to me in those, so why should you not be faithful in this?" Do you see what I'm saying? And that was what Moses was able to do. Moses was like, "I don't know what's going to go on, but I know that God would not lead us out here for nothing. You know, God did not lead us out of Goshen to die in front of the Red Sea. He did not know what was going to happen, but he knew that God did not lead them out for that. And God did his works." So you know, you see, you know, you can point back to times and say, "God was with us. God is with us. And he will be with us till the end. Till you draw your last breath. And even as you draw your last breath, he'll be with you. And he'll go with you through the valley of the shadow of death." You know, and you see that. You know that. So you know, what have you got to fear? What have I got to fear? It's just like Roosevelt said, "What have you got to fear but fear itself?" And since God has taken care of fear, then really, what have you got to fear? The only fear that you really need is fear of God. And that's an awesome sense of fear. Boy, that is such an overused word, right? Awesome. Oh, I like the British awesome better than awesome. Yeah, awesome. But everything's awesome, right? Awesome. You know, truly, there is only really one thing that is awesome, and that's God. Because he fills you with awe. He fills you with the knowledge of his presence. And you stand there, agape, at how great God is. Remember, you used to sing that song, "How Great Is Our God? How Great Is His Name?" Remember that little song? How great is our God? How great... It's the 60s song. But it's a good one. Yeah, one of the good ones. I mean, better than Beautiful Island of Somewhere and Way Beyond the Blue. You know, those nonsensical things like, what are we singing? Remember some of those silly, pre-60s songs? One of my all-time nonsensical favorites is Farther Along We'll Understand Why. You know that one? No, you don't know any of these. Tested and tried, I'm a cause to wonder why it should be this all their day long. Cheer up, my brother, live in God's sunshine. We'll understand it all by and by. Can you imagine an Anglican vicar singing that? Why it should be thus all the day long. Why cheer up, lady so-and-so. Have a tea and crumpets. We'll understand it all by and by. But anyway, you know, we sing these songs and it's sort of nonsensical. But why not sing some of the songs that we've sung where there's real meat to it, where there's real theology to it, where there's real knowledge of God in it. You know, that's the kind of thing that really gives us hope. And so here is Moses at the Red Sea. He doesn't know what God's doing, but then God says, look, lift up your staff and see the wonders of God. And he lifts his staff and the rivers part, the waters part, and the people of Israel go through on dry land, as on dry land. It's the most wonderful deliverance in the Bible, isn't it? It's astounding. And it's obviously a type of baptism as well, you see, because you're going through the waters to find life. And yet the same waters that you go through that save the Israelites kill the Egyptians. Because Egypt in the Bible was always the symbol of sin and death, slavery. So, you know, it's a wonderful story, Exodus 16. But we learn to trust God by trusting God. We learn to trust God by what He has done with us previously and what He continues to do. That's really the thought that I wanted to leave you with this morning. And that is our deliverance. You see, because God has given us the ministry of reconciliation, whereby we are able to help others to faith because of what God has done for us. Somebody said that really Christians are not perfect. They're just people who have been forgiven and continue to be forgiven, who help other poor people find God too. That's really all we do. We just try to help others find what we've found. We shouldn't hog it to ourselves. We should try to share it with other people. And you know, just sometimes a kind word. Somebody was talking about kindness yesterday. Just a kind word sometimes is enough to really break something loose in somebody's heart. You know, we often get frustrated when we're in the express line, which is never the express line. You know, Murphy's Law rules, right? The line that you move into because you think it's faster will then be the longest and slowest line.
You buy two items so you can get 25 lotto tickets.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, if you go into the express lane, the person in front of you will buy 65 lottery tickets of 7 different varieties. Yeah. And will have forgotten her credit card at the end of it.
That's no good.
Yeah. So you forget it. You just stand there and pray. Yeah, then you have to have a packet of cigarettes, yeah. There's coupons somewhere. I think I told you this last year, but let me just say it again. I was in a store, and I was standing in the express line, and it was a pharmacy. And, of course, the person in front of us, there was a guy in front of me and then a lady in front of him, and she was one of these gals, you know, that you're supposed to have 8 items. I don't know, she had about 17. And then she wanted something and some cigarettes and something else. Anyway, this guy in front of me exploded. You know, and he started yelling at the woman and yelling at the cashier. What are you doing? You know, this is an express line. What are you doing serving this woman? Why are you taking so long? This is an express line. And he was, you know, he just blew it. And then he just threw his stuff onto the counter and stormed out. I mean, he'd had it. I guess perhaps his, you know, maybe his team lost last night, you know, or maybe he was constipated, or, you know, whatever. You know, I mean, he was having a bad day. You know, he couldn't say that he had a bad hair day because he didn't have any. But, you know, the one thing about being a guy is you can't have a bad hair day.
No.
Women can't, but men can't. Maybe Roger. But the glory on which the glory shines, you know, is fine. But so you know, the woman in front of us was crying, and then the cashier was crying, and this guy stormed out, and so of course, you know, kind of gathered our wits together after this big display. And the woman finally stopped, you know, serving this other lady, and she got out and she was wiping her eyes and snuffling, and she was upset, you know, and the manager came over and was kind of calming her down, you know. And we're all standing in the express line. You know, there's 3 or 4 people behind me. We're all like, okay. Yeah, here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
And so finally, yeah, I'm the next one in line. So finally she looks up at me, you know, and I mean, she's all upset still, you know, and I said, are you okay? And she said, well, no, I'm not. You know, I said, listen, you're doing okay. You're doing okay. Do not let that person upset you. You're doing all right. So she went, really? I said, yeah, you're doing okay. We can wait. You know, I know it's an express line, but, you know, there was no need for that. There was no need for that. So she said, you're a Christian, aren't you? I said, well, yes, I am, actually. She said, I thought so. She said, because only a Christian would say that. And I thought, ooh, I'm not sure about that. Yeah. That guy that walked out could have been a minister. Could have been a minister too. You know. But I thought, you know, a kind word, you know, it really just changed the situation. And she sort of kind of gathered herself up, and she sort of, you know, smiled and sniggered a little bit, and we all had a chuckle and walked out. But, you know, it had changed, like, totally from, you know, this confrontational anger to, oh, really? You must be a Christian. You know, chuckle, chuckle. And yes, well, actually, I am. You know. But, you know, you realize that just one word can change everything. You don't have to stand there and give a great, big, long defense of why you're a Christian, you know. I mean, I could have stood there and said, do you believe in the proofs of God? You know, do you believe in the ontological argument? You know, or the teleological? You know. But she just says, "Oh, you must be a Christian." When it comes down to it, you know, when it comes down to it, things get quite basic. That's really what I'm trying to say. Things get quite basic, and people are looking at you and saying, "Oh, you know, well, that kind of sure changes things. Thank you very much. You know, at least I'm doing a good job in somebody's eyes." You know, and I think, you know, just that word in due season. Paul calls a word in due season. You know, you're able to see change. I wish I was like that all the time. I'm not. But, you know, I do believe that if you share with the faithfulness of God to other people that what you have found in your own life, they will get some of it too. You know, that will be imparted. And peace. You know, what you're really doing is imparting peace. The peace of God that passes all understanding. Shall keep, guard your life in Jesus Christ. So, just think about that, and at the end of the retreat, go back with, you know, with the peace of God. Go back with the... And some of you are going back to situations that are not peaceful, I know that. We don't live in peaceful situations in many cases. We've got things going on, either at home or at work, or, you know, with environments around us. And but nevertheless, the entrance of thy word gives light. You know, the entrance of God's word brings light and brings peace to a situation. And my neighbor is very resistant to God and very resistant to the church, and I don't know what has happened in his previous existence before I got to know him. But his daughter is very seriously ill, was born without any esophagus, and most of her stomach was missing. She's had operation after operation after operation. They've put a false stomach in her and all of this kind of stuff. And you know, he's gone through hell, he and his wife. They've gone through literal hell with this daughter, you know, all the serious things that have happened. And he knows that I'm a minister, and he knows that, you know, I'm a Christian. But he's never, you know, he always keeps it at arm's length. And so what I've decided to do is every Monday we have this routine of taking out the garbage can. I know this sounds funny, but we have, you know, these big rolling garbage cans, and we have quite a long driveway. So every Monday, I get up and I roll out my garbage can, and usually his garbage can is there before mine. But if it's not, I'll take his down. And I noticed for quite a while, for about 4 or 5 weeks, I would take the garbage cans down and he would bring his back. And then I would go down and pick mine up. I said, well, fine, you know. And I had picked up his garbage can. But he wouldn't do anything. He'd bring his up. Well, after a while, I noticed that he started bringing both garbage cans up. And then as he went in, he would go, hi. And I'd go, hi, thanks. And, you know, you say, well, what's that got to do with Christianity? Well, it's just a little gesture of friendliness to a guy who probably has not had a lot of good news in his life, you know. And so we bring the garbage cans in and we start to talk a little bit, you know. And I say, how's the daughter? Oh, she's facing another operation. Well, we'll be praying for her. And, oh, well, thanks. You know? And, but not a rejection now. Not a rejection. It's like, oh, well, thanks. And I say, we'll be remembering her in prayer. You know, we'll pray that everything goes well. Oh, well, thanks. And it's no longer rejection. It's like, oh, okay, thanks. So it's just a little warm up, and I'm looking for more and more to open up until the point where he can really say, you know, I need prayer. And I think the Lord will do it, you know, because of what's happened previously, right? Amen. Well, anyway, so pray for him. His name's Jay. I told him, I said, by the way, Jay, his name's Jason. So I said, you know what Jason means, right? He said, no. I said, it means the healer. He said, really? I said, yeah. I said, you've got a great name, because I said, you know, your daughter has had so many needs. And he's like, oh, yeah. And instead of saying, well, why the hell did my mother call me Jason? He's like, I didn't know Jason meant healing. Yeah, I said, Jason, yeah, it means healing. So I said, I guess, you know, it's a good name. You know, there's so many needs of healing in your family. Huh, yeah, guess so. You know, but it just, you know, it ticks along, you know, little things just tick along in the brain. All right, well, I think I'll finish there then because of time. But I hope you've enjoyed the talks. I hope you've enjoyed the weekend. I've appreciated Tom, by the way, as well, and, yes, and musicians. Yeah, that's glad that Tom's son was able to come too, Jonathan.
Yeah.
So I'll hand this over now to Dave. All right, God bless.